Morning shift. I'm Mickey D'Angelo, joined by Josh. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing good, man. I'm looking forward. We're going out for ice cream later on, and I'm super excited. It's like the best joint in the world, and I can't wait to hang out. It's been too much work lately. We get to talk like just non-shop stuff a little bit.
Yeah, and we're celebrating Mickey finishing his master's degree program.
Woo!
No
Finished my
more
last paper
schooling.
last night. Now my family, literally, I finished the paper last night, and my family's like, "Yeah, how quickly till but you start?" Because they know my goal is to get the doctorate next. And I was like, "No, I think I'll take a few months off before I start that." So today we're going to be talking about optimization. So in the world, most of us, and we're joined by Pam, who I'll introduce in a minute. Like Pam and I worked at UKG together. Josh and I have been using UKG for freaking decades. And so when we think of the environment we're in today, most of the UKG customers have been working towards migrating to ProWFM, previously Dimensions. End of life of that is end of this year. And so I think we see this major shift in the industry right now. Obviously UKG is one of the big players in the block where we see just this huge movement from implementation to optimization. And I think we have a lot of organizations saying, we're not sure we're seeing all the value, or we're not getting all the bang for the buck we expected out of our system. And I got to be honest, even outside of this podcast, it's been a huge conversation of mine over the past 2 weeks, talking with other partners, talking internally, talking with customers. And so I think it's super timely, excited for this conversation. So with that, Pam, welcome. Worked together a few years. Love hanging out with you and super excited to have you on Talking Shift. Thanks for making some time and joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and excited to talk with you about today's topic and just to be a part of this.
So, give our listeners a little background. Where you come from, what excites you, what brought you to the industry. You're a clinician by background, which is super exciting to me.
So I've been a nurse for many, many years, just about 20 years, been in nurse leadership in acute care, small hospitals, large hospitals. I've been in nurse leadership across the healthcare continuum. I was a CNO at an acute rehab hospital prior to going to UKG, where I was for almost 6 years as a regional nurse executive. And so that was exciting. And then now I am at Align HCM, which is a UKG exclusive implementation partner.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I think we gave you the heads up. We have this thing where we ask a very odd, off the wall, ice breaking question to get to know.
Oh,
This
boy.
one from my daughter. She shot it to me last week, and we shot a podcast just the other day. And she's like, "Did you use it?" And I was like, "No, I totally forgot. I knew I had one, but I forgot." So now here it is. This is from Mackenzie. If you could be a potato, what kind of potato would you be?
Okay. Am I answering that question first?
Yeah, let's go. Might as well.
All right, perfect. Well, I'm not going to say couch potato. I would say if I was going to be a potato, I will be a sweet potato.
And you
And
buy a sweet potato.
I will be a sweet, you know why? Because they taste amazing. They are very nutritious. They are one of the most nutritious potatoes. And they have a sweetness to them. You can use them in everything. I mean, you can make brownies with sweet potatoes. Okay, so very versatile,
Brownies.
very nutritious. Yes. Have you never heard
Made
of
chili
sweet
with it.
potatoes?
I've made like a vegetarian chili
Yes,
for
but
that.
you can make sweet potato brownies. So my point is very versatile, very nutritious, all around the best potato that there is, and that's what I am.
Oh, jeez. That's a tough act to follow, Josh.
Yeah, I would be a tater tot, honestly. And that's just
If you
because
keep stealing my ideas, I swear we're gonna throw down.
tater tots, man, they are underappreciated for how good they are, honestly, and most people forget they exist. So I think I'd be a tater tot. I mean, that's just enough said right there.
You're a complete jerk. I was going to say tater tot too, and I guess I still am at this point. But I'm going to say tater tot because I'm terribly unhealthy for you, but you love me anyway.
Oh, that's a good one.
So, in terms of optimization, let's talk a little bit. This starts a lot of times at implementation. Like, we think customers are going live and they come out, and sometimes they come out and they're not experiencing exactly what they wanted. Personally, when I look at that, I think there's three contributing factors, and it could be one or all three of these factors. One, particularly when we're talking UKG, they were thinking, oh, this is a migration, Workforce Central to Workforce Management, like no big deal. And then they get into it, they're probably about halfway through implementation and realize, oh, this is a little bit more than a migration. And at that point, you're a little bit behind the eight ball, and you got to meet your timelines, right? I think that's one item. I think another is just natural. Like, you're making a lot of decisions in a vacuum in a short amount of time. You're never going to make all the right decisions the first time. I don't care if you have the best partners with you. You'll have everyone engage you need to. It's just like, you can expect you're going to come out wanting to make some tweaks. But then I think there's also the reality that some organizations just had bad experiences, and that could have been bad experiences because they had maybe a bad implementation team or some maybe not the guidance they expected. But I also think, as much as we can point the finger that way, I think there's also the reality of they didn't bring the right people to the table. They didn't have a change mindset. They were set in their ways, or a variety of other things internal, where they might have blamed their partner, but really they owned a lot of that. That's where my thought is. Pam, I see you nodding your head. Let's get your thought. When it comes to implementation and thinking about how that might lead to we're not experiencing what we expected, you seeing the same thing, different thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I saw this at UKG when I was a regional nurse executive there, and I see it now on this side as being with an implementation partner. I talked to so many healthcare customers across the US, and first I want to validate their feelings because there's a lot of frustration out there. There is a lot of the finger pointing. Is it the product? Is it this? Is it the implementation partner? Honestly, when we do a lot of deep dive and discovery and have these conversations, there certainly is a combination of some things. But what I do see is a lot of, there probably wasn't the right guidance from the beginning. There was probably a hurried need to implement. So instead of slowing it down and saying, let's not put garbage in a new system, right? Let's instead of saying, let's kind of really look at our policies and see what we can eliminate and optimize our workflows and set it up correctly. Instead of bringing the right people to the table, they might have the system admins that come to the table and they didn't involve nursing. Well, nursing knows their own workflows. So if you don't have nursing to the table and you have
Pet
a
peeve
lot
of
of,
mine.
yeah,
Complete pet
so
peeve of mine.
exactly. It really is. If you don't have nursing at the table helping you make the decisions, well, ultimately what you're going to find is that, it's not configured correctly. And so I do see and have a lot of conversations with nurse leaders and healthcare leaders. They are frustrated at the product, but really, when it kind of deep dive, when we do that deep dive, it just really wasn't configured correctly. And there's no finger pointing. It's really about moving on from that point, but also just recognizing that you get into organizations that they don't know what they don't know. They were not properly guided, maybe. They needed a hurried implementation, or the right people were not at the table. So I see a lot of that. And then it just gets to this point of let's, you know what? We've recognized it. It is what it is. Now let's fix it and move on because you have a product in place and it really does work. And it works really well if it's set up correctly and used properly and your workflows are in place.
I'm working with a Canadian customer right now, and their implementation was quite poor. No clue who did it. To your point, it really doesn't matter. They are where they are. We have to move forward, right? But they don't even think the system can work, and all their problems they're outlining, like, hey, we can't we can't see workload. And I'm like, oh my gosh, those are all like standard items. Like we can make this work. But because they've just had this experience, they don't even know that the system can do. And that's not just the administrators, that's end users, nurse managers as well. Now, Josh, you run the user community, right? So I know we've been on calls at customer to customer, and since I left, you're continuing to do that of customers that are implementation. What do you see from your peers as you've talked to them and they've reached out for advice? How have you seen this play out in terms of what's happening during implementation that may lead to the need for optimization or an increased need for optimization?
Yeah, there's always a compromise during implementation. You have a go live date set, you have a general timeline set. And as much as we like to think that timelines may be fluid due to new dependencies that you uncovered along the way, there's always going to be a compromise in that decisioning, right? With major technology migrations, it's not always a lift and shift because, like Pam said, you don't want to put garbage from an old system into a new system. So there is a degree of optimization and house cleaning that needs to happen there. But you can get lost in that optimization world and then never go live because there's just an endless list of things that you can always fix. So you have to compromise, right? You have to cut it off at some point and take the rest and put it on an optimization list for post go live. Now, how you tackle that list is really important because once you finish with that implementation, how do you continue to engage those users to keep that ear to the ground and continue to optimize? And how does the role change within that implementation team to an optimization team? And how does the governance change with prioritizing these types of items? But there's always going to be items, right? In our 3-year-long implementation of UKG in our organization, we had a list about 150 items long by the time we finished going live with all of our markets. And now that list is about 80 items long a couple of years downstream later. So we're continuing to work through it. As we check items off, we keep adding new ones to the bottom of the list.
That's a huge, and I remember that. We can continue to be the Asana evangelist. I remember that Asana list that we just worked through with a priority. But I got to remember, I remember very clearly that when we finished, we went through and really optimized the technology side of the system and worked through some bugs and brought in some new features and reconfigured some things that weren't working the way I. We still didn't realize our ROI even when we got the technology. And I think it goes to the point you were making, Pam, of we're not just talking technology. Did you actually look at the workflows? And we had, but we also found adoption into those workflows wasn't what we anticipated. And it wasn't until we took a holistic look that some of that adoption and actually seeing the value out of the system started to change. Joshua, let's start with you, and then Pam, I want to hear what you hear from other customers and experience as well. But Josh, you were really the one heading a lot of that, particularly when it came to process.
Yeah, policy and procedure could be two very different things, depending on how they're interpreted and what the direction is from leadership in the real world scenario, that same day staffing space. So, looking at the actual procedures and process mapping that out, you're going to find significant differences in how policies are actually operationalized across an organization. Uncovering those, figuring out, okay, who are the stakeholders, who in this process needs to be advised or consulted, right? That RACI diagram, and then going and trying to figure out what the optimization actually is and how technology could help improve that efficiency. That was where we started. And after a lot of process mapping, we realized, okay, there's a lot of standardization opportunity that may not even be tech-centric. And then we can tackle the tech components once we have a standard process throughout all of our markets first. So we're starting with that. We're looking at procedures and figuring out what that SOP actually should be first.
So I'm before we go to Pam, I'm going to highlight you're in a centralized model, and we're particularly talking nursing at this point, though we could bring this well beyond nursing, obviously. If that's true in a centralized environment that had brand new processes, brand new SOPs, and still found variants, to my listeners that are sitting out there that are in a decentralized model, Can you imagine the chaos that may exist in your organization if you actually go to process map? And then if we think about optimizing a system, how do you optimize a system when there is that much operational variance happening throughout your organization? And I think that highlights the need to really get a hold of these practices as well. So Pam, what are you seeing as you work with customers and as a clinician? I mean, that's why I love having clinicians, and Josh and I aren't clinicians. So getting that viewpoint from those people that are at the bedside is probably the most important thing we can do.
Well, I think, to Josh's point, standardization of policy procedures and workflows is extremely important. I think that for nurse leaders, it can be overwhelming, especially if they have worked with decentralized processes and workflows for a number of reasons. Because they have staff that have been used to having it one way and their way. And, that's a whole challenge for those nurse leaders on those particular units to, have their staff wrap their heads around a new way of doing things. So there is some fear in that. It can be overwhelming, and especially if you have tons of policies across the organizations, to get into a room and to decide which ones they're going to utilize, which ones they're going to throw away, it can be overwhelming. So trying to help customers break that down just a little bit, something that's a little bit more feasible to tackle, is really important. I think to the second point of this conversation of what you said was adoption, I think that that is probably one of the biggest challenges, especially that I see with, nursing units that are decentralized, and when you are coming to bring on a new solution. Because if you do not have that support from the top down, making sure that everyone is sharing the same messages, trying to put out the positivity of the changes that are coming and the functionality and getting everybody on board, you can streamline all of your policy and procedures all you want. But if you do not have that adoption, that user end buy-in to utilize it the way that it should be used, you're still not going to have the product working the way that you want it work. Case in point, I just had a conversation with a customer that their nurse leaders were used to walking around with their papers. And so when we were talking about optimizing, utilizing their UKG product, they're like, well, our nurse leaders, they walk around with this clipboard, and this is how they do things, and this is their comfort level. And so I have to, point out to them the functionality of the product was so real-time data, right? You know what's happening real time. And I know those challenges of walking around with that clipboard. And I could walk for to three units to get the understanding of what's going on the unit and the staffing. And then by the time I get to the next unit, I had no idea that somebody didn't show up on the first unit. And I might have sent an extra nurse home, not knowing that somebody didn't show up on the first unit. So we have to have these conversations of why it's important, why the change is important, why the adoption is important, and give the suggestion of utilize a tablet, and that's their new piece of paper, that they have to walk around with. But it's important to educate and get their buy-in and say, here's the benefits. It's only going to benefit you. But it's really hard to pull that piece of paper away from them. Just having that piece of paper in their hand is like gold,
Okay, I gotta ask the question. We just did a change management episode, so I don't want to go down this bunny trail too bad. But what is nursing's infatuation with paper? Like I've been working and partnered with nursing for over 25 years, and while I'm not a clinician, I've been tied at the hip the whole time. And I gotta be honest, that's one thing I have not been able to wrap my head around of why I need the paper. Help me understand.
It's been the way. And that's why adoption and change management, not to go down that road, but that it's just been the way. And it's just a new way. There is a comfort in having this piece of paper in front of you that you can mark up and erase and see all your changes that you made. And even though you can do these, you don't need to see all these changes when you're utilizing a system. You don't need to know the changes because the changes that are made are the ones that you want to, happen within the system, right? So I don't know at this point, but there's just some kind of comfort in that piece of paper. It's just been the way that it has been. And Mickey, we know because we've been in these large healthcare systems. There are so many healthcare systems that are modernized, with their computer systems and their how they do things in technology. There are still so many healthcare systems out there. You can walk into the OR and it is an Excel spreadsheet that they are working on. And that's an extremely complex area for scheduling. And they're working on Excel spreadsheets. There's still a lot of paper out there that they have been living on. So you can walk into an organization and they have always had the paper and they're going to change from a paper to a tablet. It's a huge change.
Yeah, I see it every day, every week as I engage customers. When we think about and quite honestly, when it comes to optimization and looking at processes and how technology is built, let's be honest, if you're it goes to the point that you made of not having nursing at the table at the beginning. And Josh, I think of your heavy partnership you have with your nursing team and the Rock. If you don't have that going on and you're just developing a system, and particularly if it's a one, you're trying to do some one size fits all type thing, you're not meeting the needs of your end users. You don't understand the business need, and you're forcing them to use paper in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, we have a very strong central staffing office here at BSMH, but when we look back to the process map, we still need to use paper in certain capacities. And it's because we have the central staffing office making changes to the schedules, but we have the charge nurses being the boots on the ground determining, hey, what's your rotation across patient rooms? How are you going to help the units that are above and below you on the different floors of the med-surg units? And how are you going to make sure everything is airtight, right? And we have the charge nurses doing a lot of that same day staffing of headcounts and figuring out who's getting wrangled here and there and everywhere, right? Who called off, et cetera. But they have to report that back to the central staffing office, who actually makes the changes in the schedule, finds the relief for the call offs, all of that. Well, how are the charge nurses going to write down all of the things that they need to gather in a quick period of time and then socialize with the central staffing office? Today, for us, still the easiest way is paper. We'd love a technology that would allow us to communicate back and forth between the charge nurses and central staffing in a way that is directly attached to things like scheduled shifts in the system. But we don't want to also give our charge nurses the ability to edit everyone's schedules. Then we'll have too many hands in the cookie jar. So there is still an important area there where paper still exists until it's engineered out. Just like Pam
So
said, that changes to a tablet
you're
eventually.
so lucky to have such a close friend who happens to work for a tech company that focuses on staffing and is evaluating those type of needs as we speak.
Yep, it'll happen one day. We'll get rid of paper entirely. We'll turn it into iPads or tablets. The thing is the cost of paper and a clipboard is still a lot cheaper than the cost of an iPad that you have to hand off from one person to another on a unit. So we got to figure out that problem too. We got to make it mobile first, and we got to eliminate the stigma of having your phone on the unit, because your phone now is used for a whole variety of different things, right? You can access your UKG schedules, time cards, attendance balances, and even punch now via a mobile phone. 5 years ago, that was just starting to become a thing. 10 years ago, that was not a thing at all. And so we have a lot of, hey, don't have your phone out on the unit types, policies. But in reality, a lot of things are now moving to a mobile first approach.
So far we've said optimization is A about technology, and maybe not A because it's first. I don't think it is. I think it's maybe if I was to reorder that and be more appropriate, A, it's looking at your operational workflows. That's probably the first thing we need to look at, right? When we think operations, like I don't even know how to configure a system if I don't know how you do business.
Yeah, and for us, what we see here at Align, we have a lot of customers coming to us with their frustrations. But that's the first thing we do is we usually recommend an assessment. An assessment is a deep dive discovery. Those calls are the most important for us to, one, talk with them about what is your current workflows, what are you doing right now. Really, through those conversations, we have a good understanding of how they're utilizing the system. When we have that understanding, we can then also say, well, wait a minute. Why aren't you? We see that this is an opportunity here, right? We see the opportunities through those discovery calls and through that whole assessment. That's where we see also diving into their system, how they are configured. And a lot of times, what we are finding is that they're not configured correctly for the outcome and the vision that they want to have. So that those discovery sessions are extremely important to dive into to have that really good understanding because, we've talked about this before, Mickey. We'll have customers that come and say, well, we want best practice. Just give us best practice. And we have to say, listen, there are standard best practices out there, but every hospital works differently. And, whether you have multiple unions or you're non-unions, you work differently. You have different workflows. You have different, visions and goals. You have different, potential boundaries where you want hard stops and soft stops in your system. So you can have a best practice, but we need to understand what is your vision, your goals, and your needs so that we can tailor that best practice and tailor the solution to make sure that it is working with your workflows and your vision so that by the time you're using the product, you're getting what you need out of it.
I always joke and say there's not one best practice, there's 10, and that's a made up number, but the concept is
Correct.
true. I
Correct.
your idea of an assessment I think is dead on. I do assessments all the time. I do them at Ango even, not because we're a service organization, but because if you're going to see value out of our system, you have to see some value out of your other system as well. And so we look at the same things, like what are those processes. What always cracks me up when we look at those assessments, and Josh, I even think back to when you did your process mapping, you would highlight in that process mapping of, hey, this technology is available and you're just not using it. Like you're doing it out somewhere else because you just weren't educated. So you learn, okay, there's training gaps, right? And then there'll be another highlight of, oh, yeah, the technology's not working for you. To your point, we can make a configuration change to really meet this need or this process. Like you want me to, a lot of times what we see is we take requests from nursing or from our various customers in the healthcare org, and they want the technology to do something, but when we find out why, it's to support a bad practice. And so sometimes it's a this practice is just broke. Like you sh It's a bad workforce management principle, or it's inefficient, or take your pick. So there's not like a, hey, we're going to do a big technology optimization and it's going to make you better. It's a, we have to take a holistic view of how all this stuff is working together. And if you don't sit down with your end users and understand from beginning to end what's happening, you'll never understand what to do with your system.
Right.
Josh, I think adoption is one thing. When I look across the industry, I think you're one of probably the strongest I know at measuring adoption to understand what users are using our system, how are they using it, what's the level of adoption, what are the type of things you look at both during implementation and then as you've continued to mature to indicate like where do we need to focus our energies at?
Yeah, adoption is number one. As Pam was noting before, right? If you have people creating schedules on Excel spreadsheets outside of the system, it doesn't matter how many guardrails you've built in the system to ensure the appropriate scheduling practices. For example, like FLSA compliance, if you are prioritizing within your organization that employees need 8 hours of rest between their 12-hour shifts and you have people scheduling on paper, well, then the rules that you configure to have guardrails around that behavior are not going to be effective. So you have to make sure people are actually using the system. Predominantly when we were implementing, it was just making sure that people who have budgeted FTEs are actually being scheduled to their budgeted FTE, right? And if you notice that there's some units that just have zero scheduled hours altogether, those are the people that you need to get with and understand, okay, why are the schedule's not being entered into the system? Are you doing it on paper? Are you not doing it at all? Is there a tech literacy issue here? Is there a process issue? Is it a leadership issue? And making sure that the organizational mandate to adopt a certain technology has been received and is being honored. That data, simply making that data visible, has a huge impact. We publish a lot of our schedule adoption data to our end users. We say, hey, this department is at 94% of their budgeted FTE in terms of scheduled hours. These other departments are well over 100% because they're scheduling people into overtime. You can just simply see the number of scheduled hours relative to budgeted FTE, and it quickly makes visible the departments that are not using the system at all or not correctly, and it gamifies it. You'll quickly realize there's certain departments or central staffing offices or even whole institutes within a hospital. Or like, hey, we're going to make a game out of it. Get your numbers to 100% now that they're visible. That just the presence of the dashboard and the acknowledgement that people are looking at this data changes behaviors without you actually even needing to have a change management plan. So having a dashboard inherently changes practices, which is really important to know, right? KPI development, dashboard development helps you get your bearing organizationally, but it's also like the start of the journey for the rest of that continuous improvement.
Hey, are there other core data items that point out to where we see adoption and that might highlight the need to, and that when I say optimization, I'm not just talking technology, I'm talking the whole gamut again, right? Are there other key metrics you see that are at play that organizations could dig into if they have the skill set, which we'll talk about in a little bit?
Well, I think that, to kind of take it back just a little bit to what Josh was speaking to. First, initially, Josh and Bonsecours is great, right? They have all of the skill set, understanding. They know what to look for. They know how to get these reports out. They understand these data points and can measure against it. And I do speak with a lot of healthcare organizations that are they're just not at that point yet,
Oh, so true.
and that just may be because they either don't know what they don't know, they had leadership was not at the table when those demos and that product was being sold. No, nursing was not at the table, so they don't even know the functionality at that point. I cannot tell you how many customers I come across that have said, can we have a demo again of what the functionality is? Because even though they've been implemented for 2 years, they have no idea of the functionality that is literally at their fingertips, or it just may not be set up correctly. So there's it's really going back to the basics to make sure when we're talking about optimization, it is going back to the basics to understand, are they even basically set up correctly and configured correctly? Do they basically know the functionality of the solution to then have the understanding of the data that they can pull out of the system to start measuring their ROIs, measuring, the end user, the usage, the adoption, all of that. I think we have to go kind of back to the basics to make sure that there is a setup that is done correctly and that they know the functionality of the product. Then it's the optimization. When we're talking about optimization, there's a lot of pieces and parts to when we talk to optimization, right? Optimization is, are we pulling all of these data points out of the system and using them? Are we analyzing them? Are we going back and are we making sure we're making the changes so that we are getting the ROI? But what about the optimization and the fact of are we even managing the system correctly? Are we up using the updates? Are we using the functionality in the new updates that come out? Is anybody managing the system correctly at that particular point, right? So there's so much optimization. And do we have the people in-house that are capable of doing that? Or do we need some kind of managed services? So I think there's this whole pile of optimization I have so many customers that come to me. They've been implementation has been done for 2, 3 years, and they're coming to us for some support, saying, "Can you help us?" And when we look in, we have to do some reconfiguration, we have to do some correction, and then they say, "Can you stay with us?" And that's when there lies in that post-live support and continued optimization, making sure that their system is clean and it's up and running and it's configured correctly, and that there is a knowledge transfer there so that they are understanding how to utilize the system, all of the new functionality, all of the upgrades that come out, and are they using it? And then that's when you kind of go and say, if you're using it, you're pulling your reports. I think it's really important to understand that when you get to that point and you can pull this data, that's when you're going to find what's important to you and what you need to focus on for those data points, right? We all know the end game is ROI. Are we staffed fully? Are we utilizing our staff fully? Are we getting them to their full FTE? But it's getting to that point of even being able to get that data and then having them look at it regularly.
Yeah, I almost feel like this part of the discussion, we're like at a crossroads, right? You have two, maybe three different scenarios when we look at the administrative teams that exist. There's organizations that are running extremely lean. Their team either doesn't have the full skill set or not the bandwidth to move beyond just daily maintenance, right? So you have that piece, and that's where we're certain, like we can talk about that. Then you have another where you have the skill set, but they've not been empowered. I certainly see that a lot. And then you have the third where, Josh, I think this is where you live, and I can start naming off other organizations that I think are doing it really well, and I think you probably could too, where you have the team to execute the optimization. So let's talk about these three different flavors of this, because this is the key. How do we determine we need an optimization? I think we already kind of highlighted that. Like you're not running efficiently, you don't have adoption, you're not realizing ROI. Like you there, whether you can get to the data or not, you probably know that to be true at this point. And you might be even just getting pushback from your end user saying, "This thing just sucks. I want nothing to do with it." Like, so we know that happens. So depending on where you sit on that other spectrum, what do you do about it? So Josh, let's start with the organization who has a mature administrative team that, for the most part, we had some conversations earlier where maybe you're not always pulled in a consultative manner, but for the most part, you are. How do you engage in optimizations, and how do you determine what's worth the squeeze? How do you prioritize optimization list? How do you look at new functionality coming out? Give us a view from those organizations that really do have it. This sounds incredibly rude, and sorry to those that might, but together, if you will.
Yeah. So when you have a fully developed HR technology suite, let's say in-house within your organization, they typically are either owners or co-owners of organizational policies and advise on how well the technology can help improve the efficiency of the operations in that space. The greatest example would be like an attendance policy, right? My team is a co-owner of the attendance policy simply because we don't want to make policy decisions within our organization that we can't then automate through our attendance system. And there's a whole spectrum of that, right? Right now, a lot of healthcare organizations are evaluating a big paradigm shift in attendance, and that's moving from a point or occurrence-based system where you so simply just get dinged for calling off or having a tardy, to a more absence percentage-based paradigm, where it's the more hours you work, the more hours you can call off, because it's all about the proportionality between the two. So you want to incentivize people coming to work on time, and then they get more credit in the back end for when they do show up late, right? So when you're thinking through, okay, this is a huge paradigm shift. My department on HR technology, we look to see, okay, can this be automated by technology without any intervention or re-education to managers that's too significant to bear? And then what is that change management plan? What's the tech lift? What's the overall implementation and sustainability lift? And how do we keep this ship sailing once it's already left port. Now that's the fully developed HR technology realm where you're advising on the policy as well as how it marries with the technology. And then there's other organizations where maybe you don't have fully automated attendance in your system because the workforce management system is an inherited responsibility. We see this continuum a lot, right? Maybe payroll or IT owns the timekeeping system simply because it was inherited somewhere along the way, right? We moved to a Kronos or a UKG or a what have you, right? And people are punching in the system. That's about all they're doing in the system. And because the people who own it inherited that responsibility, but it's not really the only hat they wear, it's hard to keep putting on and taking off different hats. And because you're wearing multiple hats, right, the optimization becomes slower. That's where a partner could come in and really help with a ongoing holistic review of, okay, this is the opportunity you still have, right? Maybe you're not automating attendance today. Maybe that's entirely on paper. Well, your system does have the ability to do that. How do we get that off the ground? How do we make sure that it's built in a sustainable way? And we'll partner with you and bring that to fruition so that we can grow the automations in the system. So you really do see both sides of those coins, where you have the fully developed HR technology division, where it's, hey, I'm the workforce management guy and I do workforce management. And then you have, I'm a payroll person and I make sure that the fires are put out on the workforce management side. But that's really all I do. I'm just a firefighter, right? I'm not an optimization person. Making that jump could feel like it's light years for you to do that. And the partners help make that a lot faster.
Before we jump, I want to unpack the why a partner is important, because I do think it is an important factor. And so, Pam, I want to circle in and why bring in a partner? What value do they bring? Why is that additional, like, group adding to the group think important? But Josh, help me understand in your setting how you prioritize, or how you even identify, and then how you prioritize optimization opportunities.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways, right? We have our own governance, HR technology. Even though we roll up through HR, we are embedded within IT. We're embedded within, obviously, HR. We're embedded within finance. We're embedded within nursing and within operations. So all of the separate governance committees for these main silos that you typically see within healthcare, they consult with us when they're talking about a process change and determining how technology could be an element of that project or process. So for official projects, like things like changing your rounding rules for an entire organization, right? That's something that we would be consulted on and be an active stakeholder within that initiative. But that's really top-down projects. There's a lot more bottom-up projects that we end up becoming aware of simply through engaging with end users. We have a weekly virtual support call. It's 2 hours every Thursday. We have multiple members of our team just hopping on a Zoom call. And then anyone within our ministry who has questions about timekeeping, scheduling, attendance, leave, you name it, if it touches our system, we'll answer the question. First
By
come,
the
first
way,
served.
I'm going to tell all organizations, to me, from a support end, it's the biggest support win you could ever do. We'll have a totally separate conversation on that one day, but I got to advocate for it. And I do that because Josh and I found that together over 10 years ago now. But nonetheless, continue on, Josh.
It is the greatest tool, though. It's mutually beneficial because the end users get to learn directly from a system administrator. They get to have their questions directly answered without having to fiddle with a ticketing system or a shared email inbox. They just get on the call, they ask the question, and they hop back off, right? It's the most efficient way of doing it. But then also, we benefit from hearing from the end users how they're using the system. Like, hey, I made a new configuration change that has to do with partial open shift requests. And then a manager hops on and says, hey, you said that you can only request shifts that are 6 hours long. Well, our employees need to request shifts that are 4 hours long. Like, oh, okay. Like, we just identified a whole new use case here. Let's unpack that a little bit more. Let's figure out how we can change the technology to enable that practice for you. Now we have another project that we can kind of spur up here from the ground up. So it's that grassroots engagement with your end users that really drives a lot of those small tweaks and changes, as well as large projects that come into the woodworks here just from talking to people and solving problems. And honestly, it's the best part of the job, really. I just like solving problems for people. So that gives me the opportunity every week to do that.
So Pam, when you don't have a Josh, you need a partner. I mean, it really is that. Or if your team is so lean that they can't get out of the day to day, you need a partner to help you, because your workforce isn't going to be the same 5 years from today than it is. Like, we're evolving, technology's evolving, and if you don't keep up, we're all going to be back to where we were 10 years ago, and I don't think any of us want to go there. So give me the advantages from your point of why bringing a partner in to do assessments, to help with optimizations, and maybe even engage in managed services. Why is it needed, and why is it a good idea?
Well, I think to your point, well, first of all, Josh, I want to commend the virtual calls that you have, breaking down those silos, because we all know that those silos are in healthcare, and it sometimes it's just as easy as a phone call and letting you know of that they had the 4-hour shifts, right? Maybe you didn't know that, and that's been a big headache. But as far as bringing in a partner, I think it is really important when you do not have a Josh in your system and you do not have the knowledge of really understanding the configuration within your system. Coming in and doing those assessments, a partner will really hold your hand. They will really guide you. They will really try to understand your workflows, how you work, your vision, and work with you to tailor the solution to work for you. That's our bread and butter. We need to make sure that you are happy, that you are utilizing the system. And if you're happy with what we've done, we have a lot of customers that then stay with us. And when we're talking about optimization, I again go to, it's not just optimizing the system in that moment. It is not just the managed services, but it is onward, like ongoing. Those tickets, if you don't have somebody in your system that is helping you manage those tickets or do these little configurations that you need, and you don't want to wait months for someone in support to get back to you to do that work for you. If you have a new integration that you need, and that could be a whole long process, but you need that done, quickly. This is where partner and post-life support, optimization, they all come hand in hand to make sure that your system is working the way that you need it to work, but also any additional changes that you need, reports, these data views that you want built. Managed services, making sure that we are continuing, that it is staying optimized so that you're not losing out on that ROI or on any of that functionality, making sure that you are supported. This is especially important. There's a whole lot of healthcare systems out there that do not have a Josh and a team like that. And it's great, Josh and the team that you do, but when you don't, a partner is there. Partner is there for implementation. You have a great partner. You will know they're a great partner because they want to do that assessment. They want to understand how you work. They want to hold your hand and make sure that and challenge you, right? They don't want to just sit there and say, well, and listen to you say, just implement it, best practice. Well, they need to be challenged. A good partner would challenge you and say, what is it that you do? How do you want it to work? What is your vision? If you do it that way, it's not going to work. I need you to understand this. So a good partner will make sure that you are being guided in the direction of which you do want to go, that you choose to go.
So we're running on time. Josh, give me any final thoughts you have in terms of just optimization. You're talking to your peers. What's your biggest piece of advice?
I've got two. The first one kind of bridges on what Pam was just saying, actually, about the partners. Benchmarking is also another great benefit that partners can offer. That's a huge important piece once you're live is, okay, now that we're using it, are we using it correctly? Do we have best practices we can glean from other organizations in similar size and operating in the same space? Right. So that benchmarking is really important. Partners could say, okay, you defined this problem for us. I've actually solved a very similar problem for another organization. Here's how we did it. And then now you have a very collaborative discussion with another set of eyes on the same problem. You have new solutions being brought up. So benchmarking is super important in a post-go live space. And then second is, yeah, you've built the car, right? Now you're learning how to drive it. You don't want to put the pedal to the metal too fast. You don't want to innovate simply for the sake of innovating. You may feel like you need to deploy all these new bells and whistles and technology that's coming out. And most workforce management solutions, they release on a regular cadence, right? They have major version releases, and then they even have biweekly or monthly express upgrades where they just layer things in on top of things, right? You don't need to use it all until you have the use case for it. So work on figuring out the process first, and then figure out how the technology works for that process, not the other way around. So that's my final thoughts really about this.
Final thoughts from Pam. We could do an hour, I know, but let's keep it short.
No, I'll keep it short. I think that, again, to kind of dovetail, Josh, slow it down. You know, if you're going to rush into something, you're going to end up with a problem. Slow it down, clean up your policies and your workflows. You know, if you're going to choose a partner, make sure that they are working with you and that they are providing that guidance. I do recommend it. And really just making sure that you are all working together to get to the same place. Also, if you are in a point of frustration, don't stay there. Don't necessarily think it's the product, and you know, work with a partner if you're needing to fix it and get to a better place. And I think that you know, ultimately that will be your ROI, and you end up being, you know, thrilled with the product.
I'm going to piggyback off of that and continue to grow that a lot of times I see organizations are frustrated with their product and they're like, we want to go to something else. But when you do an assessment, you learn if they were to do the same thing with a new product, they'd have the same problems because their problem is not the technology. And so I'd say certainly recognize that if you're that frustrated, you're thinking new technology, take a step back and actually evaluate the further landscape. And I'll add, if you're thinking of optimizing or you're thinking of growing your team so you can optimize yourself, and you're thinking, man, especially in today's healthcare landscape, we can't afford it. My pushback is you can't afford not to. Your largest spend is on your people, and the ROI turned into actually leveraging your people to do the work they were made to do. You'll see cost savings in agency spend, overtime, incentive, but you'll also see it in a lot of soft areas like employee engagement, which will lead to retention, which, you know, pay accuracy, like the list goes on. You cannot afford not to give this attention. You're thinking, we can't spend the money. You can't afford this. You're going to spend the money one way or another, quite honestly. Right. You're going to spend more money if you don't invest here, is kind of my closing thought process. So with that, Pam, thanks for joining us. Always a pleasure to hang out with you. Looking forward to seeing you in the coming months at the various events that happen in the fall. And Josh, I'll see you at ice cream in a few hours.
Will do.
Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you.
Thank you.
We'll
thank
talk
you.
Shift later. Take care. All.
Right. Bye.
Bye.